theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode featuring John and Quinn, your favorite podcasters.
Your favorite podcasters. We are continuing the story.
Yes.
Of our time in India.
It was a wild adventure. This is one of those episodes that it's the wild adventures of John and Quinn.
It was wild. It was one of the more planned adventures we've ever
Definitely.
Had. Definitely. That did not stop it from being as exciting and wild as it usually is.
Yeah, it was. We had no idea what it was going to entail. And when, as we said in the last episode, we quickly realized, like, holy crap, we're going to be speaking in front of a lot of people for the next few days. And this is going to be kind of fun.
It was a really amazing experience. It kind of felt like for really one of the first times ever, like, ambassadors.
Yes.
From the U.S.,
right,
you know,
yep.
And that was a really beautiful thing. And I just can't say enough great things about the people in India.
Yeah.
Just such hardworking, amazing, beautiful people. So,
so special.
Really excited to continue on this story because we ended up doing a lot of things after we left EDI.
Yep. So we ended up coming back to the hotel. We went to bed. We woke up, got some bomb breakfast again. I can't tell everyone how good this freaking Indian food
was. The best.
I couldn't stop eating it. We ended up getting picked up by our lovely driver, same guy the whole time, and we ended up going to a bit of a spiritual place, wouldn't you say, my love?
Yeah, it was very spiritual and did not expect to be able to do something like this. This was really fun and cool.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that they integrated this into the plans because it allowed us to get more of a cultural understanding of India. And they took us to, the technical term is Sabarmati Ashram, which is more specifically known as Gandhi Ashram. And it is where Gandhi lived for 12 years of his life. And it's also where he started his monumental walk that started the independence movement for India.
Yeah, so he really, I mean, was a huge activist and hugely influential. I mean, he would fast, he did these walks. Yeah. I mean, he did these amazing things where it was very peaceful, protesting, basically trying to tell the British government that they want their independence.
Yes.
And to be free from, you know, certain taxation in different products because they were locals in India. So, this place was so beautiful. This
was
like
very moving.
It really was. There was a beautiful statue of Gandhi there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just walked
actual
around.
Actual size.
Yeah. And you
sitting down.
You honestly, it just seemed like it was a place where you could just walk, be quiet, mm-hmm. and almost, it was almost meditative just right off the bat. Everyone
you can
there.
Meditate and prayer all over the property.
Everywhere because it was just so beautiful. It was like there were so many trees, there was nature all around.
Right
and it
next
was
next to a river.
So cool. And no one was like yelling or screaming. Everyone was kind of there to just, you know, take some solace, be present, and just really kind of learn and understand, you know, the amazing things that Gandhi was able to, you know, incite, basically.
Yeah. The main takeaways that I had were, one, he really was simple living. And, you know, you can already tell just by, you know, the images of him. He was not about, like, living very comfortably. And it was kind of real when you see that in person. Second was, for some reason, I always view Gandhi as such a spiritual being.
Yeah.
Like, almost to the level of, like, Buddha or, like, Jesus Christ. And to actually, like, see, like, his home and relate to him as, like, a human being was, like, really weird for me. Like, it was like, whoa, this is, like, this is the highest. I mean, I can't think of many other people that have that much of a spiritual connection besides Gandhi. And he is so mythical, you know? Like, it's almost like a magical fictional story that's mysterious. And I just felt that the whole way through. And it just made me feel, like, so much more connected with the story of it. So many of us know the story already. But to actually go there and see the place, that hit me in my core.
Yeah,
and so I definitely felt the spirits. I loved it. You could see the wild parakeets, you know, flying around.
So
and
beautiful.
It was a little bit like it was off the road. I mean, a lot around it has grown up to be like a major city, but you definitely get that very peaceful vibe when you're in there that you're kind of stepping out of the city for a minute. And so
you do.
And I really appreciated that that part of the trip.
Me too. They did a really great job of explaining the history with like really great photos and everything like that in various different languages. So it was really an international way for others to come into India and really kind of feel and understand how much Gandhi did. He was really thinking outside of himself.
So influential.
And most of the things that he did, it was very much not about him. It was about how one human can actually, you know, really make a change for the collective, for the better.
Definitely.
So it was really amazing, and I'm so grateful
Gandhi's
we had
the man.
That. What a cool dude. And if you don't know the history of Gandhi, I would really recommend that you go into that rabbit hole. You will not be disappointed.
It's fascinating. It's so amazing. We went there, and then we kind of shifted gears rather quick from going to like peace and calm to actually like going through the city, but more so towards the outskirts of the city where a lot of manufacturing was done. And this was cool because, what, as we said, this whole program was done through Center of Creation of Economic Wealth in Oklahoma. And there were some guests that came, not just the one that we worked with from India, but there's others as well. And one of them, he ended up working, or I think he actually was part owner of this massive manufacturing facility where they were making infrastructure, like huge pieces for like bridges.
Yeah,
and
beams.
Yeah, massive beams. I mean, these were like pipes that we could walk through, and they were
crazy.
Cutting them and shaping them. You can just imagine like what that looks like. And this was primarily done with humans, not like there's no robots anywhere, you know, like no robotics. I mean, you might see like cranes and some big, you know, heavy duty oiled up machines, but these were like people. And it was crazy because as we were driving through, everything kind of changed. We saw these high rises that were definitely not for the wealthy, but like it was a lot of like working class individuals. Mm-hmm. And then the people were just like all over the streets with like, I remember there was like a camel, this is dirt roads. We pull up, everything's kind of dirty. And the people are working, they're not in proper manufacturing, what we would call proper manufacturing attire, you know, with a hard hat and like bright orange to like, you know, safety precautions.
Yeah.
They were in like buttoned up shirts, but you know, with regular dress pants, but working out there, hammering, you know, welding, doing all the hard work. And we got to go in there and learn about the process, talk to some of the workers, if they could speak English, talk with the founders. And it was a big mind shift for me to see this kind of the inner workings of the people in India, in Ahmedabad specifically.
Yeah, that was incredible because just for context, these manufacturing facilities in the United States, it would be in a building usually, right? Yeah, really big facility, like a huge warehouse where everything's all set up. Here, it was mostly indoor outdoor, and a lot of it was on. Yeah, like you said, dirt roads, you know, there was a lot of dust around. There was also, I mean, not all of them were, you know, constructing things on dirt. There was cement too, but it was a very open atmosphere where, you know, the elements were, you know, all over the place and whatnot. Yeah. But it was amazing to see. And I don't know why this felt so odd to me, but it was amazing to see humans still manufacturing things with their hands.
Yeah.
You know, like that, and like
on that level,
like big, the big massive things, like really, these were for like pieces that were contracted out for bridges and for real significant
big buildings.
Yeah. And so it was really amazing for me to see the humanness interaction within, you know, like an industrial manufacturing situation.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, it's something that you and I mean, maybe our grandparents remember that in the United States.
Right.
But for us, you know, we just think, oh, manufacturing robots, probably some sort of like a factory line, maybe, you know, like what does that look like? I'm not really sure. And it kind of similar, I don't know, this is gonna be kind of a weird connection, but it's kind of like, you know, when you eat meat, but you never actually know what it's like for the animal to go through what it has to go through to in order for you to be able to eat that.
Right.
You know, it was a similar kind of experience to me where it was like, wow, humans are really still making these things in lots of parts of the world that we see and we just kind of take for granted of like, how did that even get constructed?
Yeah.
It was like, it's really understanding the foundation of how things are built.
Yes, definitely.
It's cool.
We went from that to various different manufacturing facilities.
Yes.
And this was over a few days, but I think it's good to like discuss them while we're on this topic. The other one that I remember very clearly was going to, I believe it was primarily a co-op, and it was where they made different clothing items, you know, like different shirts and stuff. And they actually had a picture of Hillary Clinton on their wall when she came to India, and she actually visited this facility. And we were like kind of blown away by it.
Yeah.
And they just had floor after floor after floor of primarily, well, actually it was pretty well balanced between ladies and men, but
yeah,
they were just on their sewing machines making hundreds of shirts.
Yeah.
I mean, thousands of shirts were being made there. Some of them were more artisanal, mm-hmm. you know, like they were like, you know, deeper cultural meaning. But the ones that I'll never forget were just like your general button-up shirt, you know,
yeah,
something that, you would see at Old Navy or yes. Gap. Mm-hmm. And I talked to them about it, and they were like, yeah, those are the types of clients we have. And we make, you know, all their shirts. Someone has to do it, and that's what we do. And I was like, oh my gosh, to see the process of the shirts that I wear every day, the shirts that I honestly try to get at the lowest price possible, to see the humans behind them was game changer for buttons.
Absolutely. That I think that is a really, I'm glad that you brought that one up, because, you know, we went into this because John and I were working with artisans around the world, right? And
right.
so we were going into this co-op just really wanting to learn mostly about how they structured their co-op
mm-hmm.
to actually help, you know, more indigenous artisanal yeah. products to be made and sold to different, you
right.
know, places around the world. But when we saw that on one of the levels, we were like, wow, this is, they obviously are diversifying their strategy beyond just artisanal,
yeah.
you know, like
I asked
one-off
them about
goods.
That,
yeah.
And they said that it's because they have to figure a way of being able to support them with work all
yeah.
the time.
All the time, yeah.
And so
it's a good problem to have.
They don't have the ability to just do artisanal items that are like really socially focused.
Yeah.
They have to have a balance of making sure that the most amount of people are working and getting a consistent paycheck. And so they do have to get those other products that some could argue, you know, they're not paying at the price that we would want the employees to get paid. But at the same time, got to come from somewhere. There's a market for it. And so it is what it is. And it was freaking eye-opening for me.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing was it was eye-opening to us on the globalization level,
yes,
right?
Definitely.
Where it was like, okay, this is what happens when globalization reaches like a point of scale,
yes,
right?
Yep.
Where it's like you can really fund these amazing organizations like this co-op who is really trying to, I mean, we know how difficult it is to find artisans, let
yeah.
alone establish a co-op of artisans from yeah. various different villages.
This is like hundreds of people.
This is hundreds
there.
Of people. Like they and the artisanal section of this co-op was really, it was a co-op that brought in artisans from India from all over
yeah,
the place.
Different parts, yeah.
And it was all focused on women, trying to make sure that
yeah.
they were, you know, equipped with what they needed to be able to produce, to work, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to actually dive into the numbers of how much that can really change a society when
oh,
you
yeah.
really do give women the opportunity to have their own income, source of income, and have their own skills and talents being put to good use so that they're actually producing beautiful things that they're proud of, right?
Right? Yeah.
And that whole process is not easy to kind of bring in. And they did a wonderful job. And it was such a
they
trip
did.
To see Hillary Clinton
yeah.
when Bill Clinton was president.
Right.
She actually did come and she
yeah.
she made a visit to this place to see the great work that they were doing to
yeah.
empower women around their own country.
It was beautiful. It was weird. It was so crazy for me to see. I mean, we've all seen factories. We all know kind of the stories behind our products being made in China, but I've still never seen that in China. And so this was the closest
no.
I've ever been to actually like seeing it, feeling it, meeting them, all that.
And yeah.
It was something I'll never forget. I'm grateful that we did that.
Me too. And we really got an amazing, like deep, I would say our knowledge about the systems, the various different systems in India trying to encourage economic growth. We got to really dive in deep and also wide. We got,
yes.
So we not only got to see the industrial area and how that was being manufactured,
mm-hmm.
and then we also got to see, you know, clothing, right?
Yeah,
and then artisans and co-ops. We mm-hmm. also even got to meet.
Food.
Yeah.
Food and beverage.
Exactly.
And this was a really cool company. I mean, the way that it's set up, it's like a huge corporation, but it's a co-op
yeah.
where they create milk products primarily.
Yeah.
And they have an amazing system for how they get their milk. Do you want to kind of explain a little
bit? Well, I think that, I mean, if you don't know what a co-op is, it's essentially a co-op is like a cooperative corporation, right? It's a group where each person who is involved with it has the same amount of shares as everyone else. So in this situation, so this company basically is a milk co-op,
mm-hmm.
and the farmers, the milk dairy farmers who are involved in this co-op each have equal share in what they want to do with the company. And so
you get what you get out, what you put in.
Exactly.
You know,
and but everyone's held accountable. Everyone, you know, is expected to produce a certain amount, you know, and it works. And this model, even though it's not very well understood, or maybe it's not familiar to the modern day US.
Yes.
After the Great Depression, this was one way that a lot of corporations got people to come back and work was to actually say, hey, we're going to go more of a co-op style. So like, we're not going to focus so much on your salary. We're going to actually get you involved with the company by giving you certain shares. So they really focused on sharing their own stock shares of the company with employees to encourage them to,
I think it's a great business model.
And it really does incentivize the people who are working there to ensure that they are producing at a certain level and they want to continue to grow. Yeah. You know, it's a different approach to capitalism, but I think it really worked for them specifically, because if you really dive into the world of farmers and dairy farmers, there are several different examples where they get taken advantage of based on, you know, globalization.
Think about like the chicken market and how you get chicken today. Crazy, but the main way that I see co-ops or most utilized industry and businesses are breweries, mostly microbreweries. Yeah. Often set up a co-op design in the United States. That's where I'm seeing it most often. In India, though, they have a mule, and it's a milk producing company, and the farmers, they milk their cows, they bring their milk, and they get their milk tested in full.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like what's in it, quality of it, it gets rated on a full scale.
Yeah.
The higher the quality, the more money that they'll pay you for it. And then, of course, the quantity as well. And they bring in so much milk because they make so many amazing products beyond just milk.
Like every single dairy product that you could possibly imagine and want.
And beyond.
Yeah. In India is basically provided by this group, which is really amazing. So it's not just milk. It's yogurt.
It's butter. It's butter. Ice cream,
it's ghee. It's ice cream.
It's like smoothie to-go juices with milk in them. Like what is a... You know, the like mango lassi.
Yeah.
You know, mango like things like that.
And they have so many different products. And what was really interesting is they invited us to come into their processing facility, basically.
This is a very corporate. We're in suits and ties. They give us like little hats.
We got little mule hats. Cool. I think we still have ours. But it was really such a fascinating thing. So they gave us some samples, and then
they give us samples. Yeah. I was like, what can't I try? I had every single ice cream, every single lassi. I was very, very grateful.
It was all so delicious. And they were so nice. Like, I can't emphasize that enough. Everyone was just so gracious and amazing. The generosity of all of the people who invited us and hosted us was just unbelievable. So we got to actually, then after we got to test all of the different samples and products, we walked through their processing facility, and I'm telling you, this was state of the
art. Pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. This was like state of the art.
Yes.
Amazing technology. I mean, we're talking to some of these guys. They got educated in guys and gals in the processing facility. They got educated in America and came back because
it's like proper engineering.
Yeah, they're engineers. They're specialized, and they are in charge of this one specific area of the processing facility, which is huge.
All indoors, so very, very different from the other manufacturing places.
Very clean and sterilized.
I mean, it's got to be, right? Yeah. It's food and beverage, right? So we're walking around, and things are being produced so freaking fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen, you know, a facility where they're like pushing out milk jugs like, like 5 a second.
Yeah.
It's like so fast. It's just like pop, 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 pop. And they're just coming out packaging. Not even that many humans. They just have the right
technology.
Yeah. And the manufacturing capabilities. I mean, some of these machines hold like so much milk in them. You know, it's like, it's crazy to see that much milk being changed into different ways.
Yeah.
All throughout this multi-level massive factory. I mean, it's like, to me, it was like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory size. It was crazy. Yeah. It was very fun, very interesting, very clean.
So cool.
Very insightful. And this is probably what I would say would be most similar to a manufacturing site in the United States.
Yeah. And this is actually, it was kind of like the crown jewel of, you know, manufacturing processing facilities in India too. I mean, this is really one of the, it's one of the best, not only in India, but in the world. Like, they've really gone so far to ensure that they've got the best manufacturing equipment. They've invested great into talent. Development and to into really great talent. So it was really cool to see how a co-op though does co-op, succeed if it's done right. And it's all focused on, you know, like growth and equality amongst the shareholders. And they're, I mean, it's, I'm sure that there are case studies because this was a one of a kind kind of
it's huge. Facility. Yeah, I'm very impressed with it. And I'm grateful. So we got those manufacturing tours, which were very different, but very insightful and game changers for us. And then we started shifting our trip to having more scheduled speeches again. And these are great. I'm fully supportive of them. And the majority of them were at these universities. And Ahmedabad is known for being very technologically advanced.
Yeah.
The they don't call him the president. What do they call the leader of?
President. Oh, the prime minister.
The prime minister.
President. Yeah.
He's from there, and
well, the former.
The former. That's correct. Yes, Modi. That's correct. And so at the time, he invested a ton of money into, you know, technological advancements and so on, and that's a great reason for individuals to go to university out there. So they had some of the most amazing different types of universities that you can imagine beyond EDI, the Entrepreneurship Development Institute. And one that I'll never forget was, it was basically a fashion merchandising university.
Yeah.
Multi-level, top, I mean, the whole building itself looked like a piece of art.
Yeah.
And every single room was some type of specialization in fashion and merchandising. So some of the rooms were absolutely filled to the rim with like sewing machines.
Yeah.
Others were colorful and based on teaching different color design and so on. And we were like, holy cow, we're with the head presidente of this whole facility. Like, there's multiple campuses, and he gave us a tour all around, and he showed us the different, he introduced us to students. They presented their different projects. Mm-hmm. We talked about, you know, our project, and they, you know, did the lecture hall thing, and it was pretty amazing. It was something that I'll never forget, because that was such a different type of university than I've ever been to.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I mean, it was, I don't know, in the United States, kind of like FITM, like Fashion Institute.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, design merchandise. I think this was, I mean, this was definitely one of the top universities for that field. What was interesting, we started realizing a lot of higher education institutions in, at least in Ahmedabad and in Gujarat, were really specialized.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, you get your general education out of the way, and then you kind of have to pick your path, right?
Right.
And you specialize in it. And do you remember also the room in that facility, the one that had all of the looms?
Oh, yeah.
The old-fashioned looms.
So pretty.
That was really cool, because for us in Guatemala, we were really working with Mayan indigenous women who were primarily...
That was their tool.
That was their tool. They were working on this foot loom.
Yep.
And this was not a foot loom. It was like a hand loom.
Yeah.
But they actually had several different types of looms, and
they taught them all the techniques at that school, which is great.
It was so cool to see that this, you know, more of an old school way of designing and creating things is still being taught to the younger generation. And they loved it too. Some of the students were just like, yeah, this is it. This is, really love how tactile it is. And and that was really interesting for I think both of us to see and to talk about with them too, because we saw a lot of the same tools being used in that facility as we had when we were in Central America with our artisans. So that was really fun.
Yeah, we went to a few other smaller teaching schools where they were like very hands-on, and it was awesome. I mean, they sometimes, when they're in the more intimate settings, that's when you're getting like so many questions thrown at you.
Yeah.
And it was really great. They had some great professors. I mean, one of the professors was from Texas. He got his doctorate at Texas San Antonio. And he was there teaching at this university. We were kind of tripping out about it.
It was really interesting. But he really was one of the more interesting professors that we spoke with, because he was like, yeah, why wouldn't you come out here? Like, this is, because we were in our PhD programs, and we were like, well, obviously you just try to get a job in America. This is very early stage. And he was like, no, think outside of that, man. There's so many great things going on. And especially here in this small school. Yes. But what we're doing here is amazing. And that's where we actually ended up meeting one of the student entrepreneurs who was working to develop an address system for Amazon. Remember?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He was the one who was like, yeah, well, I obviously started noticing like the difficulty of delivering things with Amazon stemmed from the fact that they don't understand how the local system works in delivering stuff.
Yeah. You explain that, because there's like little alleyways and like they're, you know, some of the streets aren't named or they have nicknames.
Right.
And if you're unfamiliar with the area, how do you get from, you know, how do you get down there? Well, where do you leave the package? You know, this is all completely new to India, and they were trying to take their business model, Amazon's business model, and implement it. It wasn't working, and this kid was a genius.
There was no official address with a lot of these roads, especially in rural areas.
Residential,
And so, he was basically, rather than have, like, Amazon was trying the more top-down approach where it's like, okay, I'm delivering these, I'm offering these services, and you need to adapt to our systems and processes. He was like, well, that's not going to work for a long time. Best of luck. Why don't we actually try to start creating a system where we don't have to change the local, you know, areas and how it's all done, but you're actually more informed now to be able to successfully deliver packages or whatnot to different areas of India.
I think it allowed the locals to help, you know, design and explain the different roads and kind of give their own address and different ways of doing it. And it was really smart, honestly.
Really cool.
I don't know if it ended up being like the new way that they do it, but we do know that Amazon's been investing a ton of money into India.
Well,
we're excited about that.
What was also cool too was by meeting the professor from Texas and also the various different student entrepreneurs at the different schools that we visited was, when we talk to them, well, okay, cool. So you're working on this now. Like, what do you want to do when you graduate? And the response was, oh, well, there are a ton of incubators and, you know, different places that I can go afterwards. And that was the intention. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to go get a real job after this, after I have fun doing this experiment.
No,
I'm going to go. And there are actually a lot of really amazing incubators, co-op working, or like co-working spaces and stuff like that in different parts of Ahmedabad and all over India, honestly.
Yes.
So that was really interesting. It was like the intention of after going to college and pursuing some of these ideas was to bring them to fruition afterwards.
Right. And I don't want to put it down, but that was much stronger in India than we even experienced in our time in the incubator at OSU.
I agree.
You know, people are kind of dabbling around with entrepreneurship and I think this goes for a lot of the parts of the United States where there's incubators on a university campus. It's an opportunity to experiment and try out. And we always encourage students, like, just give it a try. Like, you never know what's going to come out of it. Come play around. You know, like, it's a fun place. There, it was very, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I'm working on this project. This is not a joke. This is not an experiment as much as this is, like, something that I'm going all in on.
Exactly.
And that is a different, that's something that we were kind of craving. We tried to bring that into the incubator, but you know, there's a balance because you don't want to scare people from joining.
Yeah.
There you weren't scaring people because there were so many people, as we mentioned in the last episode, that are from that area that really respect entrepreneurs creating your own business, doing something of your own. And to see that in action, to check out these incubators, which had very similar resources, if not more resources, some of them were really well funded, than even the ones that we visit in the United States. It all depends on where they're at and what they're doing and what their focus is on.
Yeah.
And some of them had amazing success stories coming out of there too.
Yeah, they did.
Like really big money success stories. So that was wonderful. That made me feel at home.
It really did for both of us. And it showed us also that it really does take all stakeholders to make a real entrepreneurial ecosystem, right? And that includes not only the institution, it includes, of course, the professors, but it includes the students too, who go there with intention and know, you know, what they want. But then the other factor that what I think was really interesting that we got exposed to as well was the governmental branch of how this was being encouraged.
Yes.
So maybe in the next episode, we can explain a little bit more about that, because really it takes all the shareholders, all the stakeholders, you know, all the ones who want to create a better society, a more entrepreneurial society, to come together and work together as one. So
I'm excited to share that with them.
Me too.
We were definitely feeling like diplomats, and it was a spectacular adventure that we will share in part 3, my friends.
Looking forward to it.
Until then, hope you have a great day. Talk to you later.
Bye.